This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the response to First Lady Melania Trump over the weekend highlighted the hostility the left has to our first freedom. Patrick Gary, a constitutional law professor at the University of South Dakota, explains. And speaking of the attacks on the first freedom, what is at stake in this debate? Don Vanderboon, owner of West Michigan Beef Company, tells us. Also, over the weekend, Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of the infamous Roe v. Wade Supreme Court case, passed away at the age of 69. What many people don't know is that for the last 20 years, Norma had worked to try and overturn the landmark abortion case in which she had been the plaintiff. The Reverend Flip Benham, who headed up Operation Rescue in the 1990s, joins me to explain why Norma McCorvey changed her views on abortion. That's coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website is TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more information right there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Okay, over the weekend, the president had a rally in Melbourne, Florida. First Lady Melania Trump joined her husband. And this is what she did. I want to play this clip for you. This is the First Lady addressing a large crowd in Melbourne, Florida over the weekend.
Thank you. Let us pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Well, as you can hear, the crowd went wild, but social media also went wild, but not in a good way. The vast majority of what was said, I can't repeat on the air, nor would I want to. But some were such like, Melania starts, this is one tweet, Melania starts the dictatorship rally with the Lord's Prayer. Not every American is Christian. Country over party. It went downhill from there. Also, making fun of her accent. Talking about how she has to read cards and notes in order to say the Lord's Prayer. And this is all coming from the left that celebrates immigration. And here we have someone who immigrated to this country and is the First Lady of the country. But is it more than just the fact that she's an immigrant? Is it more than the fact that she opened this event addressing the crowd? Is it really the issue of the public expression of religion? Joining me now to talk about this is Professor Patrick Gary. He is at the University of South Dakota. His area of expertise is in the First Amendment, administrative law, and media law. And he joins us from the state, which has, remember, the presidents there on the Rock Wall. Professor Gary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me.
It's appropriate here on President's Day that from Mount Rushmore, you speak to us about the First Amendment. Let's talk a little bit about this response to Melania Trump. Is it an underlying issue of a growing hostility toward religion, public expression of religion in this country?
Well, I think so, and I think it's been growing for decades, really. But when you mentioned that in your opening piece there, I mean, it's astonishing. I hardly really need to comment much about it. When you do look at the social media attacks on her, anybody ought to take a look at it and see what's being said about it. It's just astonishing in terms of what they say about that. And you know right away that these kinds of attacks couldn't be made in any other kind of venue. But if a person is reciting some statement of Christian belief or maybe even more generally religious belief, all of a sudden there is not only no protection allowed, but that's almost like a invitation for attack.
But Professor, on this issue of citing the Lord's Prayer, I mean, that is about as generic as you can get in terms of being publicly acceptable when you talk about the Lord's Prayer. I mean, that's something that's been cited in public for decades, centuries, in this country, but yet it evokes such a strong response. I mean, yes, we've seen this growing hostility, but it seems to me, and I'm going to ask you about a report that was released last fall that would suggest that it is accelerating in this country.
Well, I think so. And you can see it certainly during the last administration, the cases that the Obama administration took to the Supreme Court and lost. I mean, universally, the administration sided against religious freedom. And I think in terms of the report you want to cite, it's sort of, in a way, to the left, religious freedom isn't freedom. What religious freedom is religious freedom to the left is a mark of oppression and discrimination, which is a complete reversal from what's behind the First Amendment.
Well, let's talk about this, and I talked extensively about this on our program here. The Civil Rights Commission in September of last year released a report on religious, basically addressing religious liberty, but it said that religious liberty, religious freedom were code words for intolerance, homophobia, and Christian supremacy. Now, to your point about what the left sees religion as this oppressive, this call, code for repression, but yet, Professor, religious freedom is stated clearly, with no ambiguity about what it is in our nation's founding documents in the First Amendment. But yet what they are fearful of in terms of protecting these different things that they have created and found in the shadows of the Constitution have no foundation.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it is right there. It is the first freedom. And if one wouldn't have to delve too much into constitutional history to see the commitment of the framers to religious freedom. But I think in today's interpretation, it's like the left looks that phrase, religious freedom, as a kind of misnomer, as if there's no freedom. It's kind of like the way that we used to think about like free speech in a communist country. There is no such freedom in a country that denies freedom. And I think in a way that's how the left looks at religion, only from the standpoint that religion might interfere with various leftist causes or leftist issues. And when it does interfere, then religious freedom is demoted.
We see this now not only for the United States. You know, the Civil Rights Commission, of course, handpicked commissioner from Barack Obama, who did not hide or veil his hostility toward religion. But we're seeing this now even at the United Nations, where the United Nations is talking about religious liberty, religious freedom being code words or being this effort to suppress minorities. In a country that has put such a high premium on religious freedom, how do you balance it with, you know, as we've said, it's clearly enumerated, there's no ambiguity about religious freedom. How is it that our courts tend to be siding with these recently created rights versus one that is very clearly enumerated in our founding documents?
Well, that is the paradox in a way, and the way I would interpret it is because kind of the leftist vision of the non-discrimination principle, I'll put it that way, the non-discrimination principle, they've been able to elevate that. But the non-discrimination principle, of course, doesn't apply to all non-discrimination. In other words, it doesn't say you can't discriminate against Christians. What it says is you can't discriminate when the left says that discrimination is no good. And so they've been able to, I think, particularly in the cultural and popular mindset, right? I mean, we're all afraid of that discrimination tag. Mm-hmm. And then, so therefore, when that argument is raised, that has become, I think, within our cultural and to some extent legal mindset, the non-discrimination principle has overtaken everything. It's even to some degree overtaken free speech, as you can see on campuses. You know, the news is pervasive about how all the speech codes at campuses, when you can speak, when you can't speak, and when you can't speak is when that speech violates this non-discrimination principle as defined by the left. But again, it's not non-discrimination, you know, absolutely, because it's okay to discriminate against some people in some ways and some issues.
All right, Professor Patrick Gary, let me ask you the $64,000 question. How do we counter that? How was that overcome? How do we reestablish this fundamental first freedom in the light of what you've just described?
Well, I don't think it's, I mean, it's what I think about all the time, and how do you do it? In other words, you kind of have to, within the popular mindset, I think we have become so accustomed to not being discriminatory, not being racist, not being sexist, et cetera, et cetera. And we're so afraid of, you know, violating that, I'll call it social sin. And in a way, I think it's become the only social sin now. But we're so afraid of that, that we sacrifice everything else. And you know, it's not just, again, it's not just religious freedom. It's also speech freedom.
Right, right. Yeah, very, very closely tied together. That's why they're in the First Amendment.
Yeah, and I think we just need to keep working at that narrative at some point. And it, I don't think it's going to happen overnight.
Well, let me take on that issue of discrimination for a moment, because that's become kind of an elastic term. It is used in whatever format is needed at the moment. For instance, you know, when we see just recently what we saw in the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General, I mean, it's like the Trump card. That was what was pulled out against him, that he was racist, that he had a past, that he was discriminatory. Of course, that was all refuted. But it's like it almost is the final word, and there is no way to respond to it when that discrimination card is played.
I totally agree. I wrote a book in which I called, we've developed this kind of moral and cultural relativism in our country, in which, you know, there's no judgment and there's no right or wrong, et cetera. But within this culture, we have one social sin, and that social sin is discrimination. And whenever that word is used, nobody ever stops to think about what does it mean. Like, for instance, in that Elizabeth Warren attempted to read a letter from Coretta King that really had nothing to do with the confirmation hearings. But as soon as we hear the discrimination, we kind of run for cover. And it triumphs in that way. So I think it's, you know, what's the answer? You know, we'll just have to keep pounding away at that. Yeah, some discrimination is bad. But
right.
Every time, just because you raise the word, and incidentally, what happened to Melania Trump, you don't call that discrimination? Wow, just read the attacks on her.
Absolutely, without question. Attacks, personal attacks in various forms and fashion. Professor Gary, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk with you. Clearly, you get it. I wish more students had you as a professor, because I think the country and the college campuses of America would be a lot better off. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks, Tony. Thanks for the work you do.
All right. Professor Patrick Gary, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Part of this, folks, is just refusing to be intimidated. And if they tag you with a label, you know what? Embrace it. You know, when you take the hill, you know, sometimes you just got to duck and run. You just charge. And you cannot back up. Retreat must not be in our vocabulary. You know what? It's never been in the lexicon of Marines. Don't retreat. Charge. We're standing on a solid foundation of truth. We must not yield. All right, coming up, we're going to talk more about this religious freedom with a business owner in Michigan. This story, amazing. Don't go away.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. This is President's Day. And we were just talking with Professor Gary from South Dakota, the home of Mount Rushmore. Okay, now we're still continuing a discussion about religious freedom. You'll recall when the Supreme Court redefined marriage about a year and a half ago, celebrated by the press, you know, you remember. Well, a small business owner in Michigan, in West Michigan, a very conservative area. In fact, we have one of our offices there in West Michigan. Very conservative place, good, you know, salt of the earth people. This particular company owner, small business owner, less than 50 employees, saw all this stuff and just put out information about marriage between a man and a woman. And in his company's break room, well, it so happens that this is a meat processing, meat packing company, West Michigan Beef Company, and the USDA, which has to come in and inspect, saw this literature on the break room table and went to the owner immediately and said that if they did not remove this offensive literature, they would pull out all USDA inspectors, which mean the company would shut down. Yes. Well, the company filed, they removed the stuff because they didn't want to shut down immediately, so they filed a complaint with the USDA. They have yet to get a response. Now, this is a classic example of the religious hostility under the Obama administration, but yet to be corrected. Joining us now with more is the attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, our good friend Jeremy Tedesco, along with the owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, Donald Vanderboon. Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having us on, Tony.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
All right, did I get the facts correct?
Yes, absolutely you did. Don, why don't you fill in any holes?
No, that's you had it correct. I just have a small break room, and employees quite often would bring in newspapers or magazines to read and leave them there for other people to read. And so, yeah, the weeks leading up to the Supreme Court decision about same-sex marriage, there were a lot of articles that were supportive of same-sex marriage. And so, I don't know, maybe a week after the Supreme Court decision, I saw an article that was giving a different perspective, a biblical view of marriage and as one man and one woman. So I thought that would be helpful for my employees to see that perspective too. So I put it on the break room table. And as you said, it was not long before I was called into my office and very intimidating and told that if I was going to leave it on the table, they were going to shut my business down.
Now, let me ask you this, Don. When they were there and they came into your office and said, this material, how did they describe the material? What did they say about it?
They just said that it was offensive and that it was creating a harassing work environment for their USDA personnel and that they wouldn't feel comfortable working in an establishment that would have this kind of material on the table in a break room.
Now, did any of your employees bring this to your attention?
No.
So this was government officials that are in your plant that have to be there for you to operate.
That's correct. And they just walked through the break room on the way to their workstation, so they pass back and forth through there. But my employees have never had any issues at all with anything that's been on the table. So,
Jeremy, the response to the USDA, I mean, obviously, Don is a business owner. It's his business. He has a right to do, you know, within the boundaries of the law, things within his business. I mean, what's the legal grounds here that the USDA has to tell him what material he can have in his business?
Well, the legal grounds are zero, none, nada. And they have no legal leg to stand on. It's actually one of the most egregious overreaches of federal power I've seen, and boy, did we see quite a few under the Obama administration. But you know, this is essentially, if you say something that the federal government doesn't like about marriage, especially if you promote marriage between a man and a woman, and express some opposition to same-sex marriage, they're going to threaten to shut down your private business simply because you have to have federal officials present to operate your business. I mean, it's an unbelievable overreach, and the audacity of the Obama administration's Department of Agriculture to think that they have the power to make these kinds of demands of people like Don, who are just, you know, working hard to provide for their families and provide working opportunities for
employing
people in their community.
And employing a lot of people in a small business.
Yeah, I find it incredibly troubling. I find it, you know, an unbelievable overreach, a clear violation of Don's rights under the First Amendment, both free speech and free exercise clauses. And, you know, here's the thing. We hope to get it rectified quickly, and we hope that the Trump administration makes good on its promise to make religious freedom a top priority of the administration. It's very simple to resolve this. Rescind the order telling Don that he'd have these inspectors removed if he continues to express his religious about marriage at work, and get rid of the policy that allowed them to do this in the first place, because that's part of the problem here is the USDA has a policy that says anything USDA officials find offensive or disrespectful or insulting on the basis of sexual orientation are grounds for punishment.
But this is federal government wide under the Obama administration as they pushed this. Therefore, it's going to require overt effort to remove it. It's not going to go away on its own. And so this is where I know many organizations have called for President Trump to issue an executive order protecting owners and citizens like Don so that they will not have their religious freedom infringed upon.
That's right. And the executive order regarding religious freedom that was leaked to the media a few weeks ago would fix this problem immediately for Don Vanderboon. But, it, you know, I think more importantly, not just for him, but for everybody who finds themselves, having to participate in or otherwise, be involved with the federal government in programming. That goes not just to business owners, but to nonprofit organizations, religious ministries that participate in government programs or ask for government contracts.
Right. I mean,
the Obama administration.
widespread problem. An incredible. Gentlemen, we're out of time. Don, I want to thank you. Jeremy, it's always great to talk with you. We'll continue to track this case. This is unbelievable. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, the Reverend Flip Benham joins us with an amazing story. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Not a lot of economic data coming out this week. As a matter of fact, very little. Wednesday, we get existing home sales. That's an important number. Existing home sales looks like it could be low as a result of inventories of existing home sales being down. Now, this is very good for home prices, but nonetheless, probably not going to be a good number. Friday, we get new home sales. So on Friday, we're going to get new home sales. That'll be a very interesting number, but let's keep in mind, it is January, February, March are not great months for new home sales. But nonetheless, we'll see that. And Michigan sentiment comes out on Friday as well. Speaking of home sales, very interesting as we look at mortgage rates. Mortgage rates for the first time in 47 years are defying the 10-year yield. Mortgage rates have actually drifted lower, even as the 10-year yield has drifted a little bit higher or flat. So very, very unusual that that would happen. So that tells you a lot about what's going on with existing home sales as well as new home sales. And of course, even the financial sector trying to do everything they possibly can to keep that propped up. We've got some numbers coming out, earnings from Walmart. And it looks like Walmart is really focused on e-commerce, trying to give Amazon a run for their money. But according to all the reports, their biggest earning asset is still going to be groceries. So we'll watch that. I'll let you know when those numbers come out.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. You know what we were just talking about with Jeremy Tedesco and Don Vanderboon was, it tied in exactly what Professor Gary was saying about how you just call something discriminatory, harassing, hateful, and all of a sudden it's, you lose everything. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion. This guy, it's his own business. He is the owner of the business, and the federal government is telling him what he can and cannot put on the break table. And it's not like it's pornographic material. It's an article about the benefits of marriage between a man and a woman. Incredible. This is what this administration has to correct that. And we know how bad it was under Obama, but we're just discovering some of these things, how much is there. And it's going to take an intentional effort to remove it. It's not going to just go away on its own. And folks are going to need your help on this because it's not for the timid soul to take on this issue. But I tell you what, the future freedom of America depends on our ability to be bold and courageous and take on these issues. All right. Over the weekend, actually on Saturday, Norman McCorvey, better known as the anonymous plaintiff from the Supreme Court case Roe v. Wade, died. She was 69 years old. She passed away of heart failure in an assisted living facility in Katy, Texas. But for the last 20 years, this woman who had been the plaintiff in the case that opened the floodgates to abortion in this country has been working to overturn the outcome of that case. And it's because that something happened to her in the middle of the 1990s. And here to tell us about it is our good friend, Pastor Flip Benham. He was the leader of Operation Rescue back in the 90s, which became Operation Save America. And he's also the father of David and Jason Benham. Flip, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much, Tony. Thank you for having me. It's a great day to be alive in the Lord.
It is. And I know that Norma McCorvey is celebrating. she is in the presence of our Lord and Savior. We know that because in the mid-1990s, she made a profession of faith, and you were there. Tell us about it.
And she did it. She did. She gave her heart to Christ, and on August the 8th, 1995, I had the privilege of baptizing her in the name of Jesus. And this lady, who had been used by the devil in so many terrible ways, a lady that was on the wrong side of the tracks, the wrong side of history, the wrong side of eternity. She'd lived in a lesbian lifestyle, had done so many drugs, attempted suicide several times, and she came into the light of Jesus, and every sin that she had ever committed was forgiven in one divine moment. You know, the psychiatrists, if they had a bazillion hours with her on the couch, couldn't fix her, but Jesus did in one divine moment. And when I baptized her, and the most glorious picture of all is just the smile in my heart, and then the smile on her face that lit up the whole world back in 1995, and all the media covered this, and it was an amazing thing that Jesus Christ, what changed her mind about abortion, what changed her heart was Jesus, and that alone, that abortion is preeminently a gospel issue. And when we understand that, we realize the power of the gospel of Christ, that if we will allow the theology of heaven to just become biography in the streets and love our neighbor as ourselves, God himself will show up and do exceedingly abundantly above all we ask or imagine. And Norma has been a wonderful and beautiful vocal instrument of God, an oak of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor, breathing hope into mothers all across this land and being a powerful voice for little baby boys and girls waiting to be born in their mother's womb.
Well, Philip, what was amazing to me is that as you were then the head of Operation Rescue, and she was the plaintiff responsible for a participant in the Roe v. Wade case. I mean, there could not have been two more diametrically opposed people. And we often hear that those that are pro-life, they're hateful, they're filled with bigotry. But in fact, it was that befriending of her that led to her coming to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ and developed a friendship over the years.
Oh, indeed, that happened. I can remember Time magazine in the early months of 1995 had come out, and they'd seen that we had moved our office right next to the abortion mill. We had one wall dividing us. We were right next to this abortion mill called the... I've forgotten the name of it. Choice for Women is what it was called. And Time magazine did an article on us, and I had my arm around Norma, and they said, Roe meets Rescue. There's going to be violence. And I thought, what an article. I mean, there was a violence, but it was a different kind of violence. It was the kingdom of heaven advances violently, and violent men apprehended. What happened was a violence to her heart that ripped her out of Satan's grasp. And the Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade jumped off as a poster child for the pro-choice movement and jumped right into the arms of Jesus. And now she was an incredible living parable of a lady that her whole worldview was transformed in one divine moment by meeting Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and her very best friend. And she found that those that she thought were her greatest enemies were really her very best friends. And that's what happened. And not only did Norma give her heart to Christ, but six other ladies that were working in that abortion mill, they gave their hearts to Christ. It was so bad. I mean, we were pillaging the gates of hell. It was just amazing to watch what God was doing.
Flip. Flip, hold on. We got to go to a break. We'll come back on the other side of the break. Don't go away. Folks, stick with us. Flip Benham stays with us. I hope you will as well. Don't go away.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139, it says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you from AFR.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. In a moment, we're going to go to the phone lines just a bit, so hang on. But first, I want to finish up my conversation with our good friend Flip Benham. Over the weekend, we mentioned on Saturday, Norma McCorvey, who was the Jane Roe of the Roe v. Wade decision. She died at the age of 69 from heart failure. But in 1995, she was led to the Lord by Flip. She became an outspoken pro-life advocate, working to overturn the case. In fact, tried to get the Supreme Court to take the case again to overturn it because of a multitude of things, which we don't have time to go into, which were very deceptively done. But we're talking more on the personal side of this. Flip, thanks for sticking around and hanging through the break. There could not have been a more clear transformation of her life from when she came to know the Lord, from before and after.
Tony, you're absolutely right. I can remember her telling me, she said, you know, I don't know how I'm ever going to look at the Lord in the face without shame in my heart. And she wrote a little poem called Empty Playgrounds. And she said that every time I see an empty playground, a swing where nobody's swinging, a slide where nobody's sliding down, a sandbox, a ball diamond, I feel so guilty. And I took her to a little psalm, and I said, Miss Norma, you're a born-again Christian. Your sins, though they are as scarlet, are as white as snow. And I gave her this little psalm. It's Psalm 34, verse 5, that says, those who look to Him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. That, Miss Norma, you are free now. You are free to just be a voice for the voiceless. And she moved out, and she spoke so eloquently. And she just tore up all of the arguments of the pro-choice movement. She had made an incredible choice, and it was a choice her life for her, life everlasting. And now she's on the right side of history, and she's on the right side of eternity. And she has joined the church triumphant in that great cloud of witnesses. And it's our turn now to run and continue to run and win this battle.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us and telling us this story because, number one, there's a couple of things. One, it shows that speaking the truth in love, it is redemptive in nature. And when we are willing to stand and speak the truth, it results in people like Norma giving their lives to the Lord Jesus Christ and finding that forgiveness and that redemption. That's why we speak the truth. And it's so evident in this case. And I appreciate that, Flip. And also, it's very, very evident that the apples don't fall far from the tree.
Thanks, Tony. They love you, and I love you too, brother. Thank you.
All right, Flip Benham, speaking of David and Jason Benham, they are, well, the Sons of Thunder, and you can see where it comes from. I just love that family. Great men of God. I'm gonna go back here for a moment to a topic that we discussed earlier when we had the West Michigan Meat Company talking to Don there. I want to hear from small business owners your concerns. I mean, I want to hear from you as a small business owner. Now, you may not be in the meat business. You might, who knows what you might be in, doesn't matter. But you know, as a business owner, increasingly how the federal government regulates almost everything that we do. And are you concerned about your loss of freedom, the first freedom? And would you like to see President Trump issue an executive order protecting religious freedom across the board, where the federal government cannot go in and do what they're doing in West Michigan, taking away the First Amendment freedoms of Don Vanderboon? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'd like to hear from you, the small business owners, if you would like to see the president take such actions to protect your religious freedoms. Because this is very similar to the case, and it doesn't have to deal with just marriage. It's very similar to the case of Hobby Lobby. Of course, they're a much bigger company, but they're privately held. That was the case where the HHS mandate required that they provide in their health insurance coverage. It wasn't just contraceptives. They were fine with that. There was I think if I recall correctly, it was either 19 or 21 different types of contraceptives that were required under the HHS mandate. And about three of those could act as abortifacients, meaning it would kill the embryo after it had been implanted. And that was where they drew the line. It's just these three. They would do all the others. They just didn't want to do these three. That ended up all the way to the Supreme Court. Fortunately, the Supreme Court, citing RFRA, now this was prior to the death of Justice Scalia, they ruled 5-4 in favor of Hobby Lobby. But that wouldn't have even been necessary had the federal government done in the first place what the court ultimately said, that is, you have a First Amendment freedom. Look, folks, it's under attack, and we've got to defend it. And one of the ways is you've got to stand up. And so I'm grateful for business owners like Don, like the Greens, who, you know, are just saying, you know what? We're not going to surrender. We're not going to surrender our first freedom. All right, let's go to Oklahoma, where Jenny is on the line. Jenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I just have been listening, and it just makes me sick what the government thinks they can do by interfering with your business. And we own a plumbing company, a small plumbing company, and I would just not have it if they came through and said we have to do this and couldn't do that, couldn't say this. I just think it's wrong. I think it's wrong what they've done to the bakery and the pizza place and, you know, all the different companies that they interfere with. They have no business there.
Right.
They have no business there. We pay the taxes that they tell us we have to pay, and I think that's as far as it should go.
So would you like to see the president issue this executive order that's been discussed in the last couple of weeks that would guarantee the religious freedom of Americans, including business owners?
Absolutely. I have signed the petition, and I would absolutely love to see him do that, because I think it's just a travesty that people are allowed to walk into your business and say that you didn't serve them, and the government come in and go, yep, you're wrong, close down, you know, you owe us money. So.
Yeah. Well, we need to keep the pressure on in this administration, encourage them to do the right thing. Jenny, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. Now, a lot of these cases, like last week, we just had on for a few minutes, we'll probably get her back on again this week, Baronelle Stutzman with Arlene's Florist, the flowers in Washington State. That was a state-initiated action. In a lot of these bakers, there's a case that's making its way to the Supreme Court, most probably, from one of these bakeries. I think it's in Colorado. So there's a number of these that are state actions. But this, as we were talking about in West Michigan, was the federal government. And the federal government is so big, it takes forever for this stuff to kind of work its way through. And so I think unless the Trump administration is proactive in addressing this, it is going to be popping up like whack-a-moles. I mean, you're just going to see them popping up everywhere because this has been put in place. It's kind of, there's a time lag between when these policies are pushed and when you begin to see it come to fruition. And so they just need, as Barney Fife would say, nip it in the bud and put in an executive order. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Tennessee, where Gail is on the line. Gail, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Listen to you every day.
Well, thank you. Glad to have you listening.
Well, I love all the information you give out and the interviews you do. It's a wonderful program. I would like to address President Trump's executive order. When his wife called the people to prayer and prayed, and the reaction of the left toward this, God moves in mysterious ways. Maybe this is the final straw that will encourage him to sign that executive order for religious freedom.
Very perceptive, Gail. Very perceptive. In fact, it was kind of my take on it. And if you get my daily update, I kind of wrote about that today, that if the president and his team, and I'll be honest, I mean, this is not their focus. All right. It's not. It is ours. I mean, we understand the essential nature of this. They've got a lot of things on their plate. But I think you're absolutely right, Gail. I think as the president witnessed, and he's very sensitive to these things, he watches this stuff, the attacks on his wife, how could it be more innocuous simply to open with the Lord's Prayer? I mean, that's been cited, as I said earlier, for centuries. I mean, it's almost like this non-sectarian prayer. I know it's Christian, but it's certainly not affiliated with any denomination. And so I think you're absolutely right. I think this should reveal to him the depth of this hostility that has been fomented by the Obama administration and the left, and why Christians, people of faith in this country, need the protections that are being advocated for and asked for in that executive order. So I hope he gets it, Gail. I absolutely do. And, of course, we're communicating with him and encouraging them. And I think this underscores exactly why it's needed. So, folks, and continue to encourage them to do that. If you haven't signed the petitions, you can do so. I think we have it up at our website, tonyperkins.com. Others have them as well. Extremely important. All right, 866-372-7234. Gail, thanks so much for calling. Let's try to work in another call or two. Let's go to South Carolina, where Minzon. Is it Minzon? Is that right?
Hello, Minzon. Yes, sir. My first-time caller. I've been on a number of rescues with my buddy Flip Benham,
And I met Norma McCorvey in Denton, Texas. I signed a book, took a picture with her. It's called One by Love, her book, I think, autobiography. A little girl was standing behind her on the cover with an arm around her neck. This little girl was next door, you know. Her mother, I guess, worked it with Operation Rescue. And Norma would give her ice cream and stuff, talking back and forth. One day, the little girl was over there. Somebody called and railed on Norma for doing abortion. And Norma said, "I'll see you in hell." And the little girl said, "Miss Norma, you don't have to go to hell. You can go to heaven." She invited her to church. She gave her heart to Jesus. So there you are, brother.
Yep. It is, it's, you know, if we're simply willing to stand and speak truth, it opens the eyes. Without question. Minzen, thank you so much for calling and sharing the story. Let's go to Illinois, where Jeff is on the line. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you, Tony, for taking my call. I really appreciate all you do. I'm confused a little bit why we need the executive order for President Trump to sign when doesn't our Constitution already give us that? What is it that the executive order would do that maybe another president down the road couldn't change again?
Well, a good question, Jeff. Very good question. And it kind of goes back to our first conversation with Professor Gary. What has happened under the Obama administration throughout the various federal agencies, they began to push through policies that stated that views on marriage, if you held, you know, a view that of marriage being between a man and a woman, that that was considered to be offensive and hostile, and therefore was to be removed. In fact, this goes back so it's in every department. And if you just go back and, for instance, and you take the Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, who put this policy into place in July of 2015. It was their anti-harassment policy statement that prohibited written or oral communications that USDA officials considered disrespectful or insulting on the basis of sexual orientation. The policy states that managers and supervisors must take immediate and appropriate corrective action to enforce this policy when they become aware of incidents involving harassment. So, the a deputy district manager went to Mr. Vanderboon and said that you have violated this policy by having this information about natural marriage in your break room. Therefore, it violates the policy. We will remove our inspectors, which means his business would shut down. So, to your point, we've actually advocated for a statutory change, which is in the First Amendment Defense Act. Now, that has not moved in Congress, but ultimately is needed. But in the immediate, an executive order could correct this by the president making very clear that the federal government will not discriminate against people of faith because of their views of marriage or other religious issues, such as the issue of sanctity of human life. So it's not just the issue of marriage. It's any issue that emanates from the religious view. Jeff, great question. Out of time, more to talk about that. Of course, more to come this week. Folks, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. Lord willing, we'll be back. Until then, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where it says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, never, ever, ever stop standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.